Statistical significance testing is not magic. It is not proof. It is not even by itself evidence. It's a mechanism for offering evidence. The role of null hypothesis significance testing is just two: standardization and error estimation. By standardization, I mean you should all use the same statistical models and get the same answers for homeworks 2 and 3. If I give you a data set and a question list, you should all come back with having done the same thing and get the same answer. That's all we mean by standardization. We are agreeing to community standards of how we will ask and answer questions. That's it. Error estimation. Think about it this way. Think how cool it would be if every time you were going to make a decision for the rest of your life, just as you were about to err or express or behave that decision, a little voice came over your shoulder and said, "That's a really good idea," or "You're about to screw this up," and gave you an estimation of the likelihood that you just made a mistake. Think how cool that would be. That's the other part of significance testing. Whenever you make a decision, you can estimate the error of having made that decision. That's all it is. That's all it is. Some smart math people decided to call themselves statistician, and they made us a whole bunch of axes and shovels and pickaxes and other tools. We're going to learn how to pick the right tool, how to beat the data with it into the shape and form that we're hoping, and we're going to make a decision. And that decision might be right or might be wrong compared to what we should have found. And there's some complexities with that nonsense too. But that's what this is. This is assembling a tool set. For years, I gave this lecture as, you're sitting in a bar, person beside you says, "Let's flip a coin to see who buys the next beer." You buy 2 beers, 3 beers, 4 beers. You're wondering if this is a fair coin. How many beers do you buy before you tune this person up? Find out if it is a legitimate coin. I thought that was funny. I told that joke for years. My dean calls me one day. It says, "One of the students' parents tells me that you are promoting binge drinking and interpersonal violence in your stats class." Well, not intentionally. And so we agreed that I would shift to this. And now I'm waiting to hear about bat shaming or something. That's not my intent. It's just a story about buying some treats. You're at the first of 12 home games of your favorite team. You're sitting in the reserve seat you'll enjoy all season. There's information there. That tells me we're going to have 12 data points. Before halftime, the person in the seat next to you says, "Hey, how about if before each halftime we flip a coin to see who buys munchies? Heads, you buy. Tails, I'll buy. I have this official team coin we can use all 12 times." Hey, what do you know? It's heads. "I'll have some popcorn, a hot dog, a candy bar, and a drink. Want to help carrying that?" You don't think much about it because you know it's a 50-50 thing. Just your turn to lose. Happens. Next game, the coin lands heads again, so you buy your new friend hot chocolate, a Polish dog, fries, and some peanuts. Still no worries, a couple in a row. It's pretty likely. The next game, you buy him a couple of runs of some cotton candy and an orange drink. Finally, you're starting to get suspicious. Before the next game, you have a chance to talk with a friend of yours who has had a statistics course. Notice who the hero of the story is. Just saying. This is who I want you to be. I want you to be the hero in other people's stories because you're the person who had the stats class. You ask your friend, "I bought snacks all 3 times, which could happen if the coin were fair, but I don't know how many more times I can expect to feed this person before the season is up. How do I know whether I should confront them or just keep politely buying snacks?" And notice, when I put "confront" in quotes, I mean use your words. Your friend says, "We covered this in stats class. The key is to figure out what's the probability of you buying snacks a given number of times if the coin is fair." Now, if the coin is fair, it's going to keep reappearing in red. Because you got to start somewhere. This is math. It's a form of deductive inference. You have to start somewhere. You look at what happens and you decide whether to stay there or switch. That's the whole thing. You pick a place to start, and actually you don't get to pick. The statistic picks where you start. You look at the evidence, you figure out the probability of that evidence if your initial assumption was true, you decide whether to stick or switch. And then you're either right or wrong, and we can estimate the probability of that. Then you can make an informed guess. This time I use the phrase informed guess. Other times I'll say decision, conclusion. I'll even use emotionally laden words like what you believe. And statisticians don't always like when data analysts say the word believe, but remember what happens. You analyze the data. You then write down what the data are, what the result of your significance tests are, what it means, how to act on what it means, put your name on the whole damn thing, and put it out in public. If you don't believe that you've got a set of results to stick your name on, don't. This is personal. So let me whip out my book. Your friend says, this table tells the probability of getting a given number of heads out of 12 flips if the coin is fair. So how many heads out of 12 flips? This same thing will keep reappearing. We know the most likely result if the coin is fair is to get 6 out of 12. Notice that that doesn't happen anywhere near all the time. The most common result is the most common. It's a plurality. It's not a majority, and it's not damn near all the time. It's only 23% of the time. But we also know this won't happen every time. Even with a fair coin, the number of heads out of 12 will vary by chance. You know it's important. It's in a different color. Remember when we were talking about statistical conclusion validity? And I went on and on and on about how statistical conclusion validity is influenced by measurement validity, internal validity, external validity, and chance. This is the chance we were talking about. Called sampling variability. Shit happens. Characterize it however you want. But things happen without any identifiable direct cause. And I don't want to get into a whole lovely conversation about determinism even at the statistical level. Everybody knows free will is measurement error. Just kidding. The table tells us 6 out of 12 heads will happen about 22.5% of the time if the coin is fair. Notice the red part. You have to start somewhere. Notice anything. The probability distribution is symmetrical around 6 out of 12. 4 out of 12 and 8 out of 12 are equally likely. 0 out of 12 and 12 out of 12 are equally likely. So there is a continuum of probability. 6 out of 12 heads is the most likely if the coin is fair. The other possible results are less and less likely as you move out towards 0 out of 12 and 12 out of 12 if the coin is fair. All right, your friend continues. Now we need a rule. New color, important. Even though all these different numbers of heads out of 12 are possible, some are going to occur pretty rarely if the null is true. Sorry, if the coin is fair. Got ahead of myself. We'll use our rule to decide when a given number of heads out of 12 is probably too rare to have happened by chance. We start out with a fair coin. We find out what's the probability of our event if the coin is fair, and then we decide. Is that too rare to continue to believe the coin is fair? That really is what we're doing. You can put it in all kinds of matrix algebra and cool estimators and all that shit. That's what we're doing. We start here. We see the probability of what we get if this is right. And we decide whether to stick or switch. It's just like, you know, any good game show. In stats, the tradition is the 5% rule. Any number of heads out of 12 that would occur less than 5% of the time, if the coin were fair, is considered too rare. We will change our mind and we will decide that it isn't a fair coin. How are we doing? So based on this, we'd accept that the coin is fair if we buy 6 or 7 or 8 or even 9 times. Because 9 times is going to happen just over 5% of the time by chance. 5% is our cutoff. However, we'd reject that the coin is fair, and use our words, if we buy snacks 10, 11, or 12 times. Actually, the coin's probably not fair if you buy 0, 1, 2, or 3 times, but no one complains if the other schmuck cheats themselves. So we have a cutoff, or a critical value. of 9 heads and 12 flips. Any more and we decide the coin is unfair. How are we doing? All right. Let's see. Yes. Let's see if this is making sense. Let's say you're at a candy store with a friend of a friend, you know how unreliable they are, and decide to sample 8 different types of expensive candies. This friend of a friend just happens to have a deck of cards in their pocket and suggests you pick a card. If it is red, then you buy. If it is black, then they will buy. Notice this is another 50-50 deal. In a fair deck of cards, there should be 50% red and 50% black once you get the ads and the jokers out. Speaking of coincidences, you just happen to have a table of probabilities for 8 50-50 trials in your pocket. Because remember, you're the hero. Using the 5% rule, what would be the critical value we'd use to decide whether or not a deck of cards was fixed? Are you willing to buy 4 times? 5? 6? 7? No. Critical value is 6. Anything more than that, we change our mind. What would we decide if we bought 6 candies? One of them days. That could happen 11% of the time. That's below my use my words threshold. Buy the candies and join them. What if I bought 7 times? That's too rare to believe. We got to talk. I'm still going to enjoy the candy. I'm not sure I'm buying all 7 of them before we're done. Back to the Game and Munchies. Just as you're thanking your friend and getting ready to leave, your friend says, "Of course. There's a small problem with making decisions this way." Sit your ass back down. "Notice what we've done," says your friend. "Using a 5% rule leads to a critical value of 9 out of 12 heads. That is, we have decided to claim," there's another word, decide, conclude, believe, act as if, claim, "that 10, 11, or 12 out of 12 heads is probably the result of an unfair coin. However, we know that each of these outcomes is possible, though with a little probability, with a fair coin. Any fair coin will produce 10 out of 12 heads about 1.6% of the time. Chance, sampling variability, tails happen. But when it happens, we will claim that the coin is unfair and we will be wrong. That kind of wrong is called a false alarm." Why is it called a false alarm? Because we decided to start with the coin is fair. We got a result for which a fair coin is unlikely, and we raise the alarm that we should change our mind. You raise an alarm when you want to change your mind. You don't raise an alarm to stick, you raise an alarm to switch. That's why it's called a false alarm. We're raising an alarm and we're wrong. How are we doing? You mean all these words that they told us for years actually mean shit? Yes. It's just like it was a sentence.
No, I'm sorry. Can you explain that one more time?
Okay, so we're starting out saying the coin is fair.
Yeah.
Suddenly I have evidence that the coin is not fair. And I raise the alarm that I'm going to change my mind. And that alarm was wrong. It was a fair coin and just a low probability event. Awesome. Your friend is getting into it now, like me. Most unfair coins don't have a head on either side. That's too easy to check. Instead, they are heavier on the tail to increase the probability they will land heads. So there is also the possibility that the coin is unfair, but produces fewer than 10 out of 12 heads. If that happens, we'll incorrectly decide that an unfair coin is really fair. And that's called a miss. We should have changed our minds, and we didn't. How are we doing? False alarm, miss. And so what this looks like, in one of the thousands of 2x2 boxes we'll share together, in reality, either it's a fair coin or it's an unfair coin. That's it. You start by figuring out what are the possibilities in reality, because that sets the stage for everything else. So either the coin is fair or the coin is unfair. Then we collect our data, number of heads. We make our statistical decision. If the number of heads is less than the critical value, we consider it a fair coin. If the number of heads is greater than the critical value, we decide it's an unfair coin, and we have these possibilities. If we decide it's fair, and it is, that's called a correct retention. We decided to retain the original assumption, and we were right. Correct retention. Every word means something. If we decided it's a fair coin, but it's not, we missed. We should have changed our mind, and we missed it. If the number of heads is greater than the critical value, we're going to decide that the coin is unfair. If it really is fair, we made a false alarm. And if it really is unfair, we rejected our initial assumption, and we were correct. A correct rejection. So those are the four possibilities that right now define our universe. We're going to make a decision. It's going to be one of those four right now. So back to the cards and candies. We decided the critical value would be 6. Here we go. You buy 5 out of 8 candies. Are you going to decide that that deck is fair or fixed?
Fair.
Fair, 22% of the time, nowhere near 5%. Later, you look at the deck and it is fair. Are you right or wrong?
Right.
What kind of right? A correct?
Correct retention.
Correct retention. You buy 7 out of 8 candies. What do you decide? Fair or fixed?
Fixed.
That only happens 3% of the time. Let's go talk. Later, you look through the deck and it's a regular deck. Were you right or wrong?
Wrong.
What kind of wrong?
False.
How you doing? You buy all 8 candies. What are you going to decide?
Fixed.
You're going to decide how to bring this up. Later, you look at the deck. No spades, 2 sets of diamonds. Are you right or wrong?
Right.
What kind of right?
Correct rejection.
Correct rejection. Dynamite. You buy 6 of the 8 candies. What do you decide?
Fair.
Later, you discover the clubs have been replaced with hearts. Were you right or wrong?
Wrong.
What kind of wrong?
Miss.
How we doing? That's our world. That's what all this comes down to. We get some data, hoping that our data represents the target population, because that's the representation part. We look at the data, starting somewhere, and decide whether to change. Whatever our decision, we might be right or we might be wrong.